Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Bill Maher, who's a stand-up comedian, television host, political commentator, author, and actor, who first on Politically Incorrect and for the last 7 years on HBO's Real Time has become known for his political satire and socio-political commentary. He has been nominated for 22 Emmys and in 2008 starred in the seventh highest grossing documentary ever, Religulous. He started his career as a stand-up comedian in 1979 and still performs at least 50 dates a year. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bill Maher.
Thanks, Ian. Nice to be here.
And Bill, it seems that, you know, the old adage that art imitates life, in terms of being a comedian, how do you keep up with the comic absurdity of some of these candidates running for president? I mean, you couldn't invent a Michelle Bachmann, let alone her husband, or the pizza man, you know, this guy who says things like, well, I don't have all the facts on this, but Mitt Romney has 15 wives or something. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable.
No, it's true. It's a challenge to be funnier than the people who are supposed to be the ones we're making fun of. But that's also sort of the joy of doing what I do. And as a citizen who loves my country, I'm not happy about the direction our country is going in and the people who populate this leadership vacuum. But as a comedian, in the golden era, and I always laugh because I remember in 2008 when Bush was leaving office and the media was constantly doing articles and calling up people like myself and others in my profession saying, what are you going to do without George Bush? Is comedy itself going to end? And I remember saying, I don't really think so, especially in the Republican Party. I mean, their bench of absolute doofuses is so deep that a Mr. George Bush goes away and a Miss Michelle Bachmann steps up and a Miss Sarah Palin steps up and an Eric Cantor and a John Boehner. And then all these candidates we had, Trump and Herman Cain and Rick Perry. I mean, there is no bottom, is what I'm saying to the Republican Party. You think there's a bottom, you think they can't get any dumber, and they somehow constantly top, or in this case, bottom themselves.
So you profit while America goes to hell in a handbasket.
Very much, yes. I am the 1%.
So do you think, though, that given that one party has embraced ignorance and denial and the other party doesn't seem to know what it stands for, do you think that the 99% are going to go ahead and figure something out in spite of these corrupt vassals of the wealthy on Capitol Hill?
Well, it's not their job to figure something out. I hear that a lot. People say, they stick a microphone in the face of the protesters and say, what's your plan? It's not really their job to have a plan any more than when you bring your iPhone into the Genius Bar. It's your duty to know how to fix it. That's why you're at the Genius Bar, so someone else can fix it. It's the job of these protesters, and they're doing it, to put some pressure on the left wing in this country, which, of course, used to be the center. We call it the left now, but that's only a relative term. Their ideas did not used to be seen as radical, but the Republicans and the conservatives did a marvelous job over the last 30 years of moving the goalposts and making their very reasonable ideas seem like left-wing and socialism and all this nonsense. And, you know, this is something people like myself have been calling upon for a long time. We did a tongue-in-cheek editorial on this show a few months ago about how the left needed its own version of the Tea Party. Now, the Tea Party put 60 people in Congress. These are the ones who, of course, made us have a big argument about whether we should pay our bills, something we never had before in that giant debt ceiling debate and so forth. And what we were saying was what we need on the left is the same thing. 60 radical, frothing at the mouth, information-free rebels who would just move their party more toward the extreme, because that's what the Tea Party did for the Republican Party. And that's not really what's going on, but it's closer. This movement, Occupy Wall Street, has, I think, the ability to move the Democratic Party in the direction it should be moving, toward a reasonable standing up for the rights of the people who have been forgotten.
But Bill Maher, do you think, though, that the problem here is that the right would rather be effective than even intellectually consistent, which they're clearly not, but the left would rather be righteous than effective.
Well, that's a false equivalency, I think, you know, and that's a big problem, I feel like, in our political rhetoric and the debate is the media, which is not a genius body itself, constantly prefers this notion that if we somehow come down 50-50 on every issue, that's being fair and balanced. It's not the case, because it's not always true. You know, when Glenn Beck was being fired, people said, well, or leaving Fox, people said, you know, he was the same thing as Keith Olbermann on the. It's not true. Keith Olbermann, you may not agree with him, but he sticks to the facts. He doesn't make things up. He's not clinically insane. And Glenn Beck is somebody who was, you know, about to have a breakdown on the air. I mean, he was days away from playing with his own poop. I think that's why they got rid of him. We are not in a situation where the left is anything like the equivalent of the right. They don't hold the government hostage if they don't get exactly what they want. And they don't take a pride in ignorance. I mean, it's okay for the two parties to have ideological differences. We want that. We need that. But it just happens that one side, and that's the conservative side, takes a pride in ignorance. You see, I saw Herman Cain the other day talking about, well, when the question comes about who's the president of Uzbekistan, I'm going to say I don't know, and who cares, because that's not what people care. Well, I care. I care. We're actually trying to make a deal with Uzbekistan. I think that's the country he was trying to refer to, because we're losing Pakistan. I know that doesn't seem a lot to Americans who don't think there's a world outside the oceans that protect us, but there really is, and it's important. So that's the effect of a country that has been palinized, I think. This idea that I don't know anything and I'm proud of it. We never had that before.
Well, the scary part is, though, Bill Maher, is that investing in ignorance may well pay off for the Republicans. There's a lot of disquiet out there. And as you mentioned earlier, the left is feeling kind of surly and certainly disappointed with Obama. So I'm here in the ultra left on Pacifica Radio. And I just know from my experience that there's a tendency not to be effective, to have a sense of martyrdom, to have a sense that we're going to lose identity politics, balkanize any kind of movement. Although we use the word solidarity a lot, there's precious little of it, you know.
Right. I mean, part of the problem, I feel, is that the Democrats, for example, they control the Senate with 53, and about 40 of those senators are pretty good. But there's about 13 of them that call themselves centrists. They're not really centrists. They're corporatists, and they vote with the Republicans. And it means that if you factor that in, plus the fact there has been a quiet coup in this country where you now need 60 votes in the Senate to get anything done, you can actually see a headline that says, you know, a bill 51 to 49, 51 in favor, doesn't pass. Well, if there's 51 in favor in the old days, it would have passed. So if you need 60 senators and 20% of the Democrats really act like Republicans, of course nothing is ever going to get done.
Well, you mentioned earlier this binary idea that we have in our media of fairness and balance, which, of course, Fox has made a mockery of. Clearly, though, that has led to a kind of sanctifying the ignorance of creationism by equating it with evolution. And the reductio absurdum of that would be that if you interview a Holocaust survivor, you're therefore required to interview a Holocaust denier. Are you denied a political passion? Why can't you have opinions as long as you can try and be fair? I mean, it seems to me that what Fox does is an abomination.
Well, it is an abomination, but they get away with it because nobody challenges it. And their view, the Republican view, and I say their because I think they are obviously a media arm of the Republican Party, is a lot more effective than what they do on the left. When something is polling at 40% popularity, that's not a problem for the right. What they say, if something is polling at 40%, is, okay, great. We'll get on the horn with everyone who's on our side. We'll get our talking points in a row. We'll all say the same thing for 6 months, and we'll get it up to 55. And that's exactly what they do. And conversely, the Democrats, if something is polling at over 50% popularity, that is still not enough political cover for these wussies. The repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell was polling at 75% approval. It was even popular over 50% among conservatives, and they still felt the need at that point to ask for another study to find out if having homosexuals in the ranks would, quote, impede readiness. The public option, perfect example, was polling at something like 70% approval when they started the healthcare debate. And again, the Republicans see that and they go, oh, 70%? Doable. We'll get all our people together. We'll get our talking points, even though they're a bunch of lies, and we'll get it down to 50. And they did. When they see a poll like 81% of people favor the tax on millionaires. Again, Republicans see that and they go, 81? Yeah, we can get that down to 60 or 55. We can get it to a point where it seems like it's a debate when these things really aren't much of a debate. The public never knows what it really wants. That's the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. The Republicans cynically take advantage of the stupidity and the laziness of the American people. They get it that they're ill-informed sheep and they can be led to any meadow you want to lead them to. And the Democrats don't do that. They don't lead. They follow.
Well, there's a movie out now, Bill, about politics, The Ides of March. And one of the Democratic political operatives in it says something to the effect that we, the Democrats, have got to learn from the Republicans. You know, they want to win. That's right. The bottom line.
Yeah.
And we have all of these sort of niceties on the left of trying to have some kind of principle and ideological consistency and even dare I say, morality. But when you mentioned earlier about Uzbekistan, its significance in vis-a-vis Pakistan, where obviously Pakistanis have got the U.S. by the short and curlies, as they say, because everything that goes into Afghanistan goes through there, and the ISI and the military. The joke about Pakistan is it's not a country with an army, but an army with a country, and
they're
all making money out of this disaster that the U.S. has got itself into. The Russians, of course, will gouge us up in Uzbekistan, so not that the Uzbeks aren't already doing that. But one thing that's happened to that relationship where we've been muttering behind our backs about Pakistani duplicity for so long, is that at least it's out in the open now with Admiral Mullins laying it on the table. So to my mind, I know it's a long-winded way to get to this point, but isn't there a sort of healthy quotient of honesty here in what Mullins saying and then extrapolating that out? Maybe in terms of domestic politics, it's about time we stopped celebrating our wonderful democracy and started talking about plutonomy and oligarchy.
In this country or in Pakistan? Because we have them in both. Yeah,
yes.
I mean, I wish I could, you could put out a book, a compendium of great things people said right after they were leaving office. You know, I mean, Robert Gates said the other day, something that it wasn't picked up very much because Kim Delaney was there and apparently she was drunk. but he was talking about how this government, he said, we're completely in uncharted waters here. The level of dysfunction in this government, he said, I've never seen it and I don't have any confidence that we can even agree on how to run the government, let alone solve our problems. And in the same way, yeah, Mullen, you know, exactly. I mean, it's nice to hear a little bit of honesty about that subject. Clinton did it when he was leaving office. He said, you know, we should legalize marijuana. And I thought, gee, it's a shame you weren't in a position of power for the last 8 years where you could actually have done something about that. It seems like they only have the cojones to speak truth when they're going out the door. And we certainly need to speak some truth about what's going on in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And of course, we could ignore it a little more if we didn't have those 100,000 troops there. That's the issue. It's like, why are we in a country that all 15 Palins working as a team could not find on a map?
Yeah, well, we're investing $8 billion a month in mud brick villages. The Chinese are investing in new technology. So in terms of honesty, though, do you think that it would help President Obama, particularly now that we find out from Tim Geithner's lamenting last week at a forum in Washington that Wall Street wasn't giving any money to Obama, that it was all going to go to Mitt Romney, assuming he can get past the Christian rights litmus test in the primary, which is by no means a sure thing. What if Obama were to say, look, you know, you may be disappointed in me, but look, the president doesn't have much power. This country is run by oligarchs and a Wall Street plutonomy, and they've hired most of the Congress.
Which he has catered to.
Of course, but I mean, you know, now that you're not going to get anything out of them, why not call it as it is? I mean, after all, the Tea Party was formed out of outrage over Wall Street.
Yes, I was making that point on Rachel Maddow last week. I was saying that pretty much the same thing, that it's so interesting the way the Tea Party starts out pretty much on the same page as where a lot of this Wall Street protest is right now. And it just shows how easily they're herded to a different area, how easily they're led, because they live in that Fox News bubble. They don't ever hear the truth. So somehow their anger at the banks somehow morphed into, oh, we're really mad at Obamacare. That's what it is. Giving us health care, trying to make sure that we're not sick. That's what we're mad at. And then we're mad at people who are taxing the job creators. That's what's wrong with America, is you won't leave the 1% alone. It's so unfair that the poor and the powerless are always picking on the rich and the powerful. So what you have is people who are, you know, I'm not the first to say this, voting against their own economic interests. It's pretty hard to lead a country when the people themselves don't know what's the right thing for them. I mean, at least you used to be able to count on people's own self-interest. They're too dumb for even that now.
Well, welcome to America in 2012, and I fingers crossed that it won't be necessarily the beginning of the dark ages. I know we've all threatened to go to Canada on previous occasions, but I thank you for joining us, Bill Maher.
My pleasure, Ian.
Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with Bill Maher, who's a stand-up comedian, television host, political commentator, author, and actor, who first on Politically Incorrect and for the last 7 years on HBO's Real Time has become known for his political satire and socio-political commentary. He has been nominated for 22 Emmys and in 2008 starred in the seventh highest grossing documentary ever, Religulous. He started his career as a stand-up comedian in 1979 and still performs at least 50 dates a year. I'm Ian Masters. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. This program is available for podcasts, and you can sign up there at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.